The headlines: Afghan authorities are preparing to deploy troops to retake a key border crossing seized by the Taliban as a group claims to be in control of 85% of the country. South Korea plans to tighten coronavirus curbs to the strictest level possible in and around Seoul amid rising concerns about consecutive new daily cases of COVID-19. And Australia's New South Wales reports its biggest daily rise in coronavirus cases this year, despite a three-week hard lockdown. Hello and welcome, everybody. Afghan authorities say they are preparing to deploy new troops to retake a key border crossing with Iran seized by the Taliban. A spokesman for the Herat governor said the troops will be soon dispatched to Islamabad, a town along the border with Iran. The Taliban on Friday announced their fighters had captured the town. The militant group also seized the Torghundi border port, a key crossing with Turkmenistan. The Taliban now claim to be in control of 85% of Afghanistan. However, Afghan authorities have dismissed that figure, pledging to retake all the territory lost to the militants. The Taliban have increased their attacks on cities and villages since May, seizing dozens of rural districts. The fighting intensified amid withdrawal of foreign forces from the country. The U.S. also announced its complete pullout by the end of August. Amin Alimi says Afghan military is working on aerial operations to push the Taliban back in strategic points.
Taliban militant group are expanding their attacks across Afghanistan, mainly in northern parts of this country. According to Afghan officials in western Herat province of Afghanistan, as well as in northwestern Badghis, many key districts have also been captured by the Taliban militants across these two strategic provinces in west and northwest of Afghanistan. The Afghan security forces are saying that they are working on a plan to expand their attacks and operations, mainly aerial attacks against the Taliban militant groups.
UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson speaks about the full withdrawal of British military forces from Afghanistan after almost 20 years of presence in the country under the pretext of the war on terror. Johnson says Afghanistan's neighboring countries can help Afghans build their future. Amin Alimi reports.
Highlighting the low capability of NATO troops to bring calm to Afghanistan, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson recently has said that NATO must be realistic about the issue. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson also said it would take combined efforts of many nations, including Afghanistan's neighbors, to help the Afghan people to build their future. This comes as the White House recently welcomed Iran's move to host the first round of intra-Afghan talks in Tehran. The recent remarks by the UK Prime Minister highlight an Afghan proverb saying only neighbors remain for each other, not others. Afghan officials have also realized that the best way to bring calm to Afghanistan is to boost the ties between neighboring countries and the entire region.
This is a true illustration of our conviction that Afghanistan is an integral part of Central Asia and that we have common challenges and collective responsibility to work together to address them.
As a matter of fact, most of Afghanistan's neighboring countries have so far played a key role in bringing peace to the war-ravaged country, excluding Pakistan. This is because Afghan officials have always blamed Islamabad for destabilizing Afghanistan by backing terrorism.
Pakistan is not only after the revival of Taliban regime, but it also follows other goals by backing terrorism, including creating border tensions and competing with India in our soil.
A total of 457 British service members have died in Afghanistan since the UK's deployment. The number is a much higher death rate compared to the UK involvement in Iraq. Britain's last combat troop left Afghanistan in October 2014. Though about 700 remained in Afghanistan as part of a NATO mission to train Afghan forces. Sayed Amin Alimi, Kabul.
The anti-Iran terror group known as the Mojahideen-e-Khala organization, MKO, is set to open its annual conference. Several members of U.S. Congress are also scheduled to take part in the virtual meeting. Every year, the event brings together delegates paid by the terror group. The MKO has conducted numerous acts of terror against Iranians. It has carried out assassination and bombing campaigns since the 1979 Islamic Revolution, killing officials and thousands of civilians. The group also made a failed attempt on the life of Iran's Islamic Revolution leader. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei in the 1980s, the MKO has been delisted by the US and the EU from their blacklists despite the group's terror attacks and plots. The horrific atrocities of a notorious anti-Iran terrorist group have come under the spotlight as it prepares to hold its annual summit. In the following report, we'll see how the West's stance on the group has revealed its double standards.
Iran has been a major victim of terrorism over the past decades, with over 17,000 Iranians losing their lives in terrorist attacks. Iran has long criticized Western states, especially the United States, for employing double standards in dealing with terrorism. The West's support for anti-Iran terrorist group Mojahedin-e-Khalq organization, also known as the MKO, is a case in point. The notorious Mojahedin-e-Khalq organization is responsible for the killing of about 12,000 Iranian people and officials since the Islamic Revolution of 1979. The group has carried out bombings and assassinations across Iran. The MKO is a well-known enemy of the Iranian nation with a horrific record that is known to all countries in the region and beyond. During the Iran-Iraq War in the 1980s, the MKO joined forces with former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein to carry out cross-border attacks. They also helped the former Iraqi dictator to crack down on dissent at home. After the war, MKO members spent many years in a camp in Iraq's Diyala province before being relocated to Albania in 2016. The cult-like group does not tolerate any form of dissent within the organization. Former MKO members who managed to leave the group have painted a grim picture of how the organization treats its members, especially those who intend to leave the MKO. They have reported abuses ranging from solitary confinements to severe beatings and torture.
Members and leaders of the MKO terrorist group are mostly based in Europe right now and enjoy freedom of activity there. They even hold meetings with top American and European officials. The notorious group has been allowed to hold another annual summit this week.
Over the past years, MKO summits have been attended by hawkish U.S. politicians, such as former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, and former Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich. The U.S. politicians are said to have received hefty sums to attend MKO summits and back the group's calls for regime change in Iran. Observers believe the American and European stances regarding the MKO have exposed their double standards in dealing with terrorism.
When they say that they want to fight terrorist organizations, what they mean is they want to fight every sort of organization that is in any way an obstacle in the further benefit of Western hegemony. We have seen the term terrorism being used over and over and over again to assign any and every sort of organization, even the ones that are not even violent, any sort of organization that opposes imperialism.
The Mojahedin-e-Khalq organization was on the U.S. list of terrorist groups for 15 years, but then removed in 2012 to pave the way for the MKO to receive funds more easily. Iran says lobbies in the United States were heavily bribed that year to facilitate the controversial removal. Major European countries, including France, also removed it from their blacklists. Top MKO members, including its public face, Maryam Rajavi, have been moving closer to hawkish U.S. politicians. The deepening ties between U.S. and European governments and Mojahedin-e-Khalq terror group suggests that the West may be trying to use the MKO to pressure Iran.
It is not surprising, unfortunately, to see such a close collusion between the MKO and the United States of America. We have seen this happen for the past 30, 40 years. And this has become very clear a couple of years ago, of course, when they held a massive rally in which they invited people such as John Bolton and Rudy Giuliani, some of the most imperialist war hawks that the United States has ever known in the past, let's say, century. So when these people attend meetings of the MKO and when they speak there of what they consider the need for quote-unquote spreading democracy to Iran, this is what they are trying to achieve. The resurgence of U.S. imperialist control.
How can Western states be supporting this notorious terrorist group and at the same time accuse other countries of backing terrorism?
Australia's New South Wales state has reported its biggest daily rise in coronavirus infections this year, with officials warning that the worst may yet to come for the state's capital, Sydney.
Good morning, everybody. Last night to 8 p.m., we had 50 cases of community transmission. And most concerningly, 26 of those were infectious in the community. Now, that's the number we need to get down to as close as zero as possible. And when you know that there's 26 cases that were infectious in the community, the only conclusion we can draw is that things are going to get worse before they get better.
The new cases take to 489 the number of infections caused by the most recently detected Delta variant, which is highly infectious. Residents are asked to stay indoors to help contain the spread of the virus. Meanwhile, the new surge has deepened concerns that the lockdown of more than 5 million people in Sydney and surroundings will be extended. This comes as, for now, vaccinations are available in Australia only to people over 40 and those in risk groups either due to their health or work. South Korea has posted its highest ever number of nearly 1,400 daily COVID cases, which is the third consecutive day of record highs in new infections in the country. The surge has prompted the government to announce plans to tighten curbs to the strictest level possible in and around the capital, Seoul. The restrictions will reportedly go into effect on Monday or for 2 weeks. That is, mean health authorities have warned that the peak of a fourth wave of the virus is yet to come. So far, about 11% of South Korea's 52 million population has been fully vaccinated, while 30% have received one dose. According to the country's Disease Control and Prevention Agency, around 165,000 cases and over 2,000 deaths have been registered since the beginning of the pandemic. Colombia says four companies have been involved in the assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moise. Colombian police said the companies recruited Colombian nationals who traveled to Haiti through the neighboring Dominican Republic. The police did not reveal the names of the companies, arguing they were being verified. Haiti says it has identified 26 Colombians and two Haitian Americans involved in the assassination. Colombia's defense ministry had earlier said some of the attackers were former military members. The United States has said it would send senior FBI and Homeland Security officials to Haiti to help with the investigation. Haiti has also asked the United Nations to send troops to help secure the country. Moise was assassinated at his home on Wednesday. Political commentator Lahos Azdi says the four companies involved in the assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moise are likely to be mercenary firms.
Well, the thing is that we have to see the identity of those four companies that the Colombian government mentioned that four companies in Colombia, these people were working, these murderers, assassins were working for them. Now, I would assume there were mercenary companies or private security companies, but using mercenaries like these former members of the military. And it's going to be very important to determine who paid these companies to hire these men to go and kill President Moise.
A disturbing story of a Muslim woman being arrested in England allegedly because she chanted "Free Palestine" has gone viral on social media. The woman is so angry at what she feels was a gross violation of her freedom. She's informed Press TV that she's strongly considering a legal challenge against the British police force responsible for her arrest. Robert Carter is headed up to Birmingham to speak to the activist and try and get to grips with what's happened.
A Muslim woman from Birmingham is considering legal action against West Midlands police after allegedly being arrested while chanting in support of Palestine on Tuesday. The story went viral on social media after footage of the arrest was shared by Palestine Action, who were staging a separate stunt opposite where the woman was cuffed.
Under what power are you taking her away. She was just standing on the street.
Following the arrest, V managed to speak with the woman who wishes to remain nameless for the time being.
Three officers decided to come my way and start asking me to basically stop chanting. And then I challenged them and asked them, it's my right to chant. I'm outside the building. I'm not doing anything wrong. And they refused. They said, well, if you carry on chanting, then we will arrest you. And I said, well, what law have I broken? On what grounds? And they had no answer again. They were becoming very agitated, and I was speaking very calmly. And to my shock, one of the officers just grabbed my hand and handcuffed my wrist without any warning whatsoever. They were ignoring me, and then when I asked them, how long are you going to keep me in custody for? Their reply was basically until the activists on the roof get down and when it's all over.
V contacted the police for comment. They claimed she was arrested to prevent a breach of the peace and only de-arrested her after she was pressured to not return to the scene.
This story highlights the growth in tension between the state and pro-Palestine activism. Could we be witnessing the beginning of a British total ban on support for the Palestinian cause? The answer to that question could come if this activist decides to fight the battle in the courts. Robert Carter, Birmingham.
And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture. Iran is a country rich in culture, history, and art. The countless historical monuments scattered across the land are manifest proof of the glory of the ancient Persian civilization. And the development of modern-day Iran is evident in its major cities and metropolitan centers. But perhaps what's remained hidden from both foreign and domestic tourists are some of Iran's stunning natural treasures. I'm Daniel Arya. As the 18th largest country in the world, Iran offers a full gamut of climates and geographical attractions, from mountains and deserts to forests and caves. Iran's diverse and dramatic landscapes offer some truly awe-inspiring and unspoiled views to discover. In this week's program, we'll follow Javad Gharayi, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the southern regions of Iran, where the hot sand dunes of the desert meet the turquoise and tranquil waters of the Sea of Oman. Stay with us.
Travel is the most important thing in life to me. The reason I travel so much to the unknown spots of my motherland is that I want to discover the hidden beauties of its environment and to meet its diverse ethnic groups. I believe that city dwellers, with all their knowledge, education, and modernity, must have a good relationship with the natural environment and with nature dwellers in order to live a richer, more peaceful life. A relationship like this is vital for our survival in the world we live in. It's early February. In this season, temperatures can plunge to minus 40 degrees in the towering Mount Damavand region, but I've come to a part of Iran where the temperature is as high as 20 degrees above, perfect for a good long trip in the winter. Javad Gharayi. I'm an Iran trotter, and this time I have traveled to the southernmost spot in my beloved country, Iran. Follow me to one of the most beautiful and pristine areas of my country, in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. To be exact, my destination is the southernmost area of the vast Balochistan region. In terms of culture and ethnic groups, Sistan and Balochistan province is divided into two parts: Sistan in the north and Balochistan in the south. During my many trips to the natural beauties of beloved Iran, I have come across multiple beautiful mountains and spent time traversing most of them, from freezing tall rocky mountains to forested highlands to those sitting on the hot and dry deserts of Iran. But this time, on one leg of my trip to Sistan and Balochistan province, I'm supposed to find mountains that are impossible to climb. The shape of these mountains, or should I say hills, is unique and beautiful. The locals and tourists who have visited this area have named these hills Martian Mountains. Many believe that the rocky formations in this part of Iran are very similar to those on the surface of planet Mars. Geological experts say these hills are sediments at the bottom of a sea that used to be here millions of years ago, were initially buried under millions of tons of soil following the change in the shape of the Earth's crust over the years, and were later unearthed as a result of climatic changes and monsoon rains that washed away the dirt, exposing the real face of these bizarre hills. These mountains are among the most beautiful in Iran, in my opinion. They are no less beautiful than Mount Damavand, that's been registered as a national heritage. I hope the Martian mountains of Sistan and Balochistan province, of the Balochistan area and the Chabahar region to be exact, are also put on the National Heritage List. The thrust of the Gulf of Oman oceanic crust under the southern area of Balochistan, in addition to wind and water erosions, are among the reasons behind the emergence of these beautiful elevations. They are made up of sedimentary rocks containing clay and lime. The beautiful furrows on their exterior have been carved out by centuries of erosion. The heights of Martian hills vary from one area to another. At their shortest, they stand at more than 5 meters tall, and at their highest, more than 100 meters. At first glance, these hills, referred to as badlands by geologists, may look like they are not very resistant, but you will change your mind once you inspect them up close, although they're not resistant enough against the rain and water of Balochistan. In the midst of these mountains is a plain where rainwater has accumulated over many years, creating a spectacular lagoon by the name of Lipar. Environmentally, Lipar, with its many and varied animal and plant species, is an important lagoon in the region. It is an important feature of the natural environment in Balochistan. The local population use water from the lagoon for their animals and in farming. I'm on my way to one of the most beautiful valleys in the Martian mountains. I've named it the Snail Valley. If you want to know why I picked that name for it, follow me. We walk for about an hour to get to the mouth of the valley. Floodwaters set off by seasonal rains have created a beautiful and unspoiled valley and cave. This is the Nahadig Cave. It acts as the entrance to the Snail Valley. My good friend here, Shir Muhammad, was kind enough to come here from Berries to help me find this cave and walk through it to the valley. I'm sure we are in for a treat. Am I right? The valley, the Snail Valley, is a very long and deep gorge that leads to the Terap Mountain. Terap is what the locals call that mountain. The reason I named this the Snail Valley is because this place is littered with shell fossils. You can see them everywhere in this mountain and in this valley. Beautiful shell fossils that have adorned this boulder and this whole area. All the exterior walls of these Martian or miniature mountains and inside the Snail Valley is covered with these shells that have turned into fossil. Another reason is that this valley looks exactly like a snail. It meanders through the mountain from beginning to end. In some places, it wraps around itself and sends you going around in circles before you can get to the other end of it. The Snail Valley is so curvy. It's one of the most beautiful gorges in the Balochistan region. And let's not forget that if a place has a local name attached to it, we should never try and put a new name on it. We must follow the tradition of the locals who have inherited that name from their forefathers, from their ancestors. So once again, we should use the same names as they do. The gorge is almost impassable in some parts, but I am so enchanted by its beauty, I've decided to move as far as humanly possible. Its many twists and turns and the millions of fossils on its walls have redoubled my resolve to move forward. We are around 10 kilometers away from the Sea of Omar. This is a very high altitude. Obviously, thousands, in other words, millions of years ago, this whole area had been under the Sea of Omar, part of what used to be the Tethys Ocean. These fossil shells date back to that time. These are millions of years old. Every time I step into valleys or Martian hills like these, I'm filled with utter joy. But I'd never take any of these back home with me or use them as ornaments. All I do is pick them up, snap photos of them, and put them back where I found them, to share all these beauties with posterity. We must protect these treasures. We are their guardians. We walk a long way and eventually arrive at a dead end. That's when we have to trace our way back. Fortunately, there are no construction operations going on anywhere close to the Martian mountains, and that adds to the beauty and magnificence of the area. After my visit to the Martian hills, I continue my journey to one of the most beautiful semi-traditional wharfs in Iran, the Berry's Fisherman's Wharf. It is operated by the inhabitants of Berry's village, perched on top of these escarpments. Before the village was relocated to the top of the coastal cliffs, it used to be somewhere on the sand beach. Today, the locals call it Old Berry's. The villagers moved from Old Berry's to New Berry's around 20 years ago. One of the most important reasons for their relocation was the strong winds in the area that would blow for 120 days in a row and dump sand and dust on the village. The second reason was the beautiful Berry's Wharf. The architecture used in the homes and other buildings in Baluchistan has vividly been inspired by Indian and Pakistani architectural designs. They use different, beautiful, vibrant colors in their buildings. The old mosque here is located in the area where Old Berry's used to be. The rest of the village lies in ruins. They stripped the old buildings of their doors and windows and used them in their buildings in New Berry's. But they have left this mosque intact. Everything in this mosque is there, just as it has always been. That's because the Muslim population in Baluchistan have utmost respect for their mosques and sacred buildings. They never demolish them. They abandon such buildings and let nature take its course. The main occupation of the people of Berry's is fishing. The men of this land depend on the sea for their livelihood. Some strike out to the sea in small boats and throw their small nets in to catch fish. Others go out in wooden launches, which could be called the biggest of man-made contraptions. They go out to sea and spend months fishing. These large wooden motorboats are equipped with proper refrigerators and air conditioning for the crew. The fishermen here say they are not happy with their catches in recent years. They say marine life populations have shrunk drastically. The declining numbers of fish in seas and oceans has its cause in different and important reasons. The first reason behind the decrease in the numbers of marine life around the world is the boom in the human population on Earth. The growth in the human population has led to a larger demand for fish and in turn to overfishing by those in the fishing industry. Operations that are carried out via large ocean-going trawlers fitted with radars and other high-tech equipment. Ships that have nets running several kilometers and by means of radars can trap thousands of fish in every attempt in the depths of oceans. In almost every catch, these ships bring home fish weighing upwards of 300,000 kilos altogether. Industrial fishing and the overconsumption of marine life by humans leaves the fish no time to reproduce, pushing many species to the brink of extinction. In a recent survey, researchers at the University of British Columbia found that in half a century, human consumption has pushed down big fish populations by 90%. Fish that are in high demand on the market. They have predicted that if serious action is not taken against overfishing by developed countries, all these species of fish will have gone extinct by 2050. Marine life populations are on the decline, which will have dire consequences for humans and the environment alike. The ecosystems of seas and oceans are intertwined with the lives of humans and the environment they live in. They're all very fragile. Iran accounts for only a small portion of the marine life caught around the world. The reasons being high prices, the small share the marine animals have of the Iranian diet, and the absence of advanced fishing vessels in the country. But European countries, the United States, Japan, and many other developed countries play an important role in the destruction of marine ecosystems. They have done more damage to the environment than any other country in the world. And this is a result of a boom in their populations, a change in consumption patterns, and the lifestyle of the people living in those countries. There are two other important reasons that have contributed to the dwindling numbers of marine animals. Contamination and global warming. Berris is a very beautiful wharf. It was built at the foot of the Berris cliffs, offering a spectacular view. Launches and boats return here with their catch of the day to sell their prized sea creatures to the middleman. Beautiful bifellows. The local fishermen here call it the kilkita in their local dialect. It's so colorful. Unfortunately, she too is still carrying her eggs. They get caught in the fisherman's net in this season. Most of those I've seen were ready to spawn. This is their time to reproduce, but they don't get the chance to do it. They are pulled out of the water along with the thousands of eggs that they are carrying in their abdomens. Poor thing is struggling to get out of my hand. Just look how beautiful it is. So colorful. One of the fishermen gave me this lobster and said I could have it, but I'm gonna let it go because it's carrying so many eggs. Mm-hmm. After my visit to Berry's Wharf, I set off on a walking journey along the shores of the Sea of Omaha. Of course, I'll be walking on the cliffs all along. The view from atop the cliffs in Berry's is simply matchless. Fortunately, there aren't constructions of any kind up here. The area is an asset for Balochistan and indeed for Iran because of its pristineness. I hope to see the same unspoiled beauties and pristineness the next time I visit this part of my country and its beautiful landscape. I hope more and more tourists come to visit Balochistan. Nature travelers go to places that are pristine and untouched in order to immerse themselves in the peace and quiet that those places offer. Beautiful rocky cliffs that you see here are where Berry's begins. Those are the shores of Berry's, among the most beautiful of our beloved country, Iran. But the bluff along the shore is crumbling into the sea. The waves lap at the walls made up of millennia-old sediments that settled on the bottom of the Sea of Oman that used to cover this whole area. The bluff is capped by a 2-meter-high layer of rock, like the one I'm sitting on right now. It feels like reinforced mortar with all the shells and algae in it, fossils that have been here for thousands, or should I say millions of years. But the layers underneath are weak and brittle, allowing the waves to chip away at them one bit at a time. The green blocks or rocks that you see on the coast are in fact the top layer of the cliff. They used to be up where I am right now. It's going to take the waves some time to turn them into sand and dissolve them in the water. It's about 60 meters down to the foot of the cliff, and as you can see, a huge slice of the cliff has splintered from the rest, or should I say from Berry's territory, and will crash into the sea one of these days. So I better cross onto the other side because it's dangerous to stand here. I really don't want to go down with it. This gaping crack here is almost 10 meters deep, but it's very likely for it to be much deeper in other parts. It's too dark for me to see. This is a very dangerous spot.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, brothers and sisters. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. And here is Batul. Welcome to the program for a better life. In our previous sessions, we asked this question, that what is a better life? Then we came to the conclusion that a better life is when a person is happy. This happiness is not the material happiness, but it is the happiness of the soul. So how can I reach this happiness? The answer is when I become a better person. Therefore, to have a better life, I need to be a better person first. So, how can I become a better person? In the last session, we talked about the two terms, takhliya and tahliya. We said that our soul is pure, but it is sometimes covered with bad traits. Just like a gem that is covered with dust and dirt. Once the dust is removed and the dirt is washed away, then the gem would shine. Similarly, once the bad traits are removed, the soul will shine. It will glow. So, now another question. How can I wash my bad traits? How can I get rid of them? In the very first session, we said the first step is to correct myself. If I want to wash away my bad traits, if I want to become a better person, the first step is yaghda, which is to wake up. Now, wake up from what? Wake up from my deep slumber. Wake up from my deep sleep of negligence, from ghafla. Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi said that if 2 days are similar for someone, then he has made a big loss. Brothers and sisters, days here does not mean the day where the sun is out and, you know, it's warming up the day. No, no. Or the day where we say, which is the opposite of night. Over here in his saying, when he says day, it means every second. It means every moment. So each moment should be better than the previous moment. Is a step closer to Allah. Is a step towards perfection. That is why the first step to discipline ourselves is to wake up, to make the best of every moment. But a person who is asleep, who is in ghafla, who is negligent, will not be aware of this loss. That is why the ulama of akhlaq call ghafla as the filth and dirt of life. Ayatullah Jawadi Amali says that man has a dahir, the one that is apparent, and a batin, the one that is hidden. The batin of the man will be manifested on the day of resurrection. On the day of judgment, some will be resurrected while their faces will be glowing, they would look beautiful. Whereas some will be resurrected while their faces will be dark and filthy. Now, the source of this filth will be their negligence, their ghafla. Surah Haqqa describes the plight of a ghafil on the day of judgment by saying, فَلَيْسَ لَهُ الْيَوْمَ هَاهُنَا حَمِيمٌ. So he has no friend here today. وَلَا تَعَامٌ إِلَّا مِنْ غِسْلِينَ. Nor any food except filth. لَا يَأْكُلُهُ إِلَّا الْقَاطِئُونَ. Which no one shall eat except the sinners. Brothers and sisters, whenever we are trapped in troubles from outside, it is because of the negligence, the ghafla from inside. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, no bird is shot by an arrow while it is glorifying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Whenever a bird or an animal is shot by an arrow, is while they are negligent.
Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
In another hadith, he said, "The lightning does not strike the one who is glorifying Allah Azza wa Jalla." So if we make our insight strong by our faith and by remembering Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala constantly, we will never be a prey to shaitan. When the God is dawn, we fall prey to shaitan. We fall prey to our nafs. Allah says, "Wal asr, innal insana lafi khusr." By time, indeed, man is in loss. Man is in loss. Why? Because of his negligence. He has neglected himself from himself. Shaitan has no interest in a person's wealth, inheritance, status. He is after his iman, his faith. If we fall prey to shaitan, the biggest thing that attracts him is our iman, our faith. Once he traps our faith, then we will easily become gullible towards haram. We will not hesitate in sinning, but we will hesitate in doing good, God forbid. That is why we need to avoid being negligent, as it will throw us in the valley of loss. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "Beware of negligence. Whoever is negligent is certainly negligent of himself, of his life." So negligence is a big loss. Let me give you an example here. It is like a traveler who is in transit and he sleeps without setting up an alarm. What will happen? He will miss the next flight, especially if it is a deep sleep. Let me give you another example. A student who did not study the whole semester, he did not turn in any assignments, he did not take any notes in the class. Why? It was because he was either playing games on his phone or texting his friends or sleeping in the class. Now what will happen to the student? Of course, he's going to fail. He asked for it. He was negligent. He did not care. So whoever is negligent to his own life. He's negligent to himself. He's incurring a great loss to himself. It is like the verse, وَمَنْ يَبْقَى فَإِنَّمَا يَبْقَلُ عَنْ نَفْسِهِ. And whoever is stingy only to himself. If someone is stingy in spending in the way of Allah, in a great cause, they are in great loss. Why? As they have not sent anything for their future abode, their hereafter. Surah Baqara, verse 110 says, وَمَا تُقَدِّمُوا لِأَنفُسِكُمْ مِنْ خَيْرٍ تَجِدُهُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ. Any good that you send ahead for your souls, you shall find it with Allah. Whatever good that is done in the way of Allah, the reward is reserved with Him. He has promised it to us. Allah never goes against His word. So, brothers and sisters, we need to wake up from this slumber, this sleep of negligence, this sleep of ghafla, to become a better person, which in turn will lead us to a better life, insha'Allah. Wa akhiru da'wahum anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. So all I need. So all I need. All I need. All I need.
To me, 'cause your love is all I need to be all.
your love is all I need.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.